So in my short lifetime, and I think about the things that our people have come to loggerheads about and squabbled over identity and so forth, like, say, what are the really good hot-button issues would be like Mennonites and dress, Mennonites and music, Mennonites and higher education. I don't know. Prophecy doesn't even quite rate up there, but not anymore. Used to. But in our lifetime, we have seen firsthand how technology has been the number one thing that has risen to the top of all the controversial subjects in just about every community. And so much so that sometimes I wonder what the unintended consequences are of the things we no longer have time to argue about that we did back in the 80s, in the 70s. We were concerned about stuff that we no longer talk about because we now have got bigger problems. I'll just give you really one really good example. I think in my childhood, I have seen how, I mean, in my short life, how when I was a teenager, before there were cell phones, yeah, I'll just let that process a little bit. Things that were hot button issues at say Bible schools and in among youth classes and so forth were, are we going to have muscle cars? Remember that? And are we going to have, what kind of music are you going to be allowed to have in your car? And you know, you don't hear much about that anymore. Because we're a generation now where parents are like, well, I mean, if our young people are at least staying away from porn or something, that's at least that battle won. And we're not talking about other stuff. If they're at least not watching movies, at least we won that one. We're not talking about other stuff anymore. That's kind of unfortunate. But that's not our subject today. Our subject is more, okay, getting in at ground level. How does all this technology and the access to boundless information affect us in our educational pursuits? And so it is ultimately a test of acculturation. You see, the internet is about information, pure and simple. That's all it is. It's about information. And so when the devil told Eve in the Garden of Eden, I can tell you something. You can turn into a god and know everything. It was a promise. And I like to say that it took till about 2010 for that promise to be fulfilled. The internet today can tell you just about everything. You can be God to know all the good and all the evil. And so this creates a lot of questions about acculturation. We as separate people, how much are we going to know everything or not? How much are we going to be separate? And so it starts in the school. We have here Brother Lyndon and Jonathan Miller and Merle Troyer and Phil Kaufman here. So I'm going to give each of them a chance to make an opening statement, some of their perspective on technology in school. And then we have some questions here that we'd like to throw out here for some discussion and involve you. If you don't hear the one you were really hoping to hear about, then we'll take questions from you. And so frankness is in order here. I hope there's some disagreement here, because if there's no disagreement, you know, it's like a story without a plot. And so we want to learn something. So let's start with at the end there with Lyndon next.
Okay, I in thinking about this, and we were encouraged maybe to just kind of do our own pet peeve type of thing, and I thought of an epitaph that was supposedly on a gravestone at one point. Pause, stranger, when you pass me by, for as you are, so once was I. As I am now, so will you be, then prepare unto death and follow me. That's talking about life and death. But someone supposedly scratched in there, to follow you, I'm not content until I know which way you went. And that's the part that I'd like to focus on for just a little bit here is, do we really know what ways that technology is taking us? Quite often we We focus on, oh, how this will improve my life, how this will do something great for me, this will do this and this and this. And then as time passes and our children do more and more, there's more and more strugglers in school, and there's people that wonder about screen time. There's, you know, we're not sure about this. We're not sure what all is going on there. And in my role in Christian Light, I've sat into some committee meetings where we brought experts in from, there was some Anabaptist background, there was some non-Anabaptist background, telling us what to expect from screen time, as we get lots and lots of requests to make DVDs of our curriculum. And I'm reminded of something that John Swartz, our chairman, says. He says, brethren, we don't want to be the last to do something, but we don't want to be the first either. And that's good advice. But some of these things, we really need to be careful. We need to know what's going to be the end result, not just this year. What's going to be the end result in 5 years, 10 years? And I'm not sure how to find all that out. One thing that I found interesting as I would attend homeschool conventions and be there for Christian Light is people of the world coming up wanting homeschool material and talking to us about their experiences using digitalized or DVD types of learning and all, and that it was not working for them. They're ready to go back to black and white print on paper.
One of the things that I've found is that YouTube videos or videos are very effective at teaching me how to do something quickly. It is such a wonderful tool when you have to repair something on a vehicle or things like that, to be able to look it up, see the pictures. I'm visual. It's very helpful. I have noticed something that I don't like about it, and that is I forget it more quickly. I'm not talking about the teenagers. I'm talking about myself. I have to go look up the same video 5 times. Huh, interesting. I can read a story and remember it much better. But often after I've seen something on a video, I was like trying to tell somebody about it. And you know, there's this guy with kind of a long nose, and yeah, what was his name? I think it has affected my memory a little bit. Scientists say, too, that we make all of our decisions, or we make most of our decisions within the first 1.6 seconds. That's our instinct, is we've come up with the response we will probably take in that small amount of time. And I think it is important to think about that as we think about just having the information on our phone versus having it memorized, having it in our head. Just because you can find it on your smartphone does not make you a lot more intelligent, is my opinion. Shared by others, I hope. I've also been interested in how small talk is being affected by smartphones. There are businesses, I understand, who have asked people not to bring smartphones into the business meeting, because what happens is you get out your smartphone, well, you've got 5 minutes before the meeting, so you get out your smartphone, you check WhatsApp or Cloud Veil or your Onyx hunting maps or your email or whatever, instead of looking around and saying, oh, howdy, Derek, it's nice to see you here, and how's your dad doing? And engaging in small talk. And small talk is what often helps to build relationships. There's big gains from small talk. It has also been shown that people are not doing as well with conflict. The more you engage with your cell phone, the more poorly you engage with people. And when you're in a conflict with somebody, or you're having a conversation that is heated, how often do you pull your cell phone out? It's just kind of this little pacifier to check it. That is considered a very addictive sign of very addictive behavior. And I've seen it and done it. And I think this is all affecting us a lot more than we really realize.
My interest in this subject is maybe a little more general than school per se. But as this subject came up in this panel discussion, I did dig into a little more into the school side of it. So if you hear me have more to say on one part of it than the other, and I seem kind of ignorant when it comes to certain parts of it, well, that's, you're probably right. We've all benefited from technology to a greater or lesser degree, and we are benefiting from it to a greater or lesser degree. But I've been intrigued by the seemingly irreversible dominant part of it. Once it's there, how hard it is to back up. That's been intriguing to me. I don't have the answer for that. But I think it's worth thinking about. What is causing that? I have also found it interesting that it seems like in my reading and stuff, I keep, you know, John 3 verse 8 has a description there of the spirit, where it says you see the effects of it, you see the wind, you see the effects of it, and yet you have never seen it. But you see the effects of it. The effects of it are unquestionable. Electricity is the same way. Electricity is the same way. You have never seen a bucket of electricity. And yet the effects of it are there. And we know about that in California when they shut the power off and there's no storm or anything. We see that. It seems like the characteristics being the same, it seems interesting to me that the evil one has found a way to use the same pathways designed for the Holy Spirit in this tech thing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but pray without ceasing. There's other things you could look at. It seems like going straight to the sensory system or consciousness, going directly to that, it's like going direct. And the way it's taking over our consciousness and the Holy Spirit pathways is taking a toll on us. It's draining the life right out of our culture. This multi-sensory, this captivating multi-sensory simulation of life seems to be draining our culture of life itself. And I've got a book here that I may refer to here, but if anybody's interested in, I know we're not there, but I think this discussion is good because if you ever get a chance to read this book, Screen Schooled, by Joe Clement and Matt Miles, two high school veterans, teachers, from a completely secular standpoint, are taking a look at this thing, and it's incredible. Satan using God's created order to piggyback his agenda is an old trick, but he's got a new level of horsepower behind this one. Occasionally, Jesus used the children of darkness to teach some profound principles to the children of light. An example that I've come across in that is I've always been intrigued by secular professionals' opinions alongside what we as Anabaptists are grappling with. That's always been interesting to me. Whether it's alternative health or something else, if you go straight to the professional that's really good at those things and hear what he's saying, it clears up whether he's for it or against it. It really clears some things up for us, and I think Jesus meant for us to use that. Silicon Valley schools in California have been very interesting for me to look at a little bit and read on. If you want to check that out. Waldorf schools. How many are familiar with Silicon Valley schools, Waldorf schools? Have you read about them or you know? Very interesting. Apple, eBay, Hewlett Packard, Yahoo. Just the other day, we were over there for a doctor's appointment, and we drove around the Apple compound there. What these tech parents, they're promoting, making a lot of money on getting these systems into schools while withdrawing their own children from it. Very interesting. The Waldorf schools that a lot of these high-tech children are going to are stripped of any electronics. Kindergarten to eighth grade is zero electronics. They've got the old blackboard back up on the wall with chalk. They don't even have a whiteboard. Oh, they probably do, but I didn't see any whiteboard pictures. But we're back to chalk and blackboards. We're dicing up oranges for fractions, and if we cut this thing right, each eighth grader gets a piece, and we all eat it right there. What they're looking at and what they're dealing with is very interesting, and these are the eBay executive, and that's who these guys are. Very interesting to me. Some of them obviously are more honest than others. I think Steve Jobs was more honest about that than Bill Gates is. I don't know if we're supposed to be mentioning names here or not, but it's just observation. But so there's a variation with that. So
in the discussion of technology, we've heard it. Technology is here to stay, which would give you an idea that maybe it's not. It's a discussion. If we would say, yes, it is here to stay, well, that must mean that we're questioning it somewhere along the way. But I think about it, lately I've been thinking about technology a little bit like the vehicle automobile industry. We're driving down the road and there's cars ahead and behind and coming from the side, and we're looking at those cars and we're assuming people will stop and people will go and people will follow the speed limit, and once in a while something doesn't happen right, then we have a crash or a citation from law enforcement. But if you take those cars and just take somebody that has never seen a car and just say, here is cars, be interesting. Just you think about the madhouse that would happen from that. And so here's a useful tool. I mean, any of these construction guys here load their pickups up and go to work. Try doing your work without a pickup. So just some things to think about. So as we get into this whole technology thing, it's harder and harder to push it off and say, no, we don't want it, because it's just there. It's in our face. In our work, my son works with me, partner with me, and we have a crew of guys from 20 to 35. All of them are a different generation than I am. And we have this chat group among the crew, and there is constant stuff going on between them and also on the chat group. And sometimes I see it because it comes on the group, but sometimes I don't. And it bugs me because I'm old school. It's like, why don't we just sit and talk? Well, it happens. They do sit and talk. In the mornings we meet at the shop and we sit and chat and Josh and back and forth, but it's happening probably a lot more on the chat, on the group, than it is in the shop. And I'm just talking about the big broad world, but that's where it is. It's there. I think the thing we miss, this is the challenge for me, is we had a family group chat or some discussion came up between my younger brother and my sister. And she said, so how do I help my children with this phone stuff? She just like, they're so far ahead of me and I don't know what they're doing and I can't keep up. And he said, like we were taught, he said, figure it out. It's your job. And I think that's where we miss it. She was actually pretty aggressive and she said she's going to figure it out. She knows a lot more about phones than I do, because she just started studying it and figuring it out. And what's going on? And what's TikTok? And what's this? And what's that? And what is this stuff? What's the stuff I'm hearing from my youth? Like, how does that work? She just started figuring it out. We're all too busy, right? We don't have time to sit on a phone or any device. But at the end of the day, unless we do some studying into it and figure it out, I have children too, so I struggle with the same things we all do. We have schools that we're not sure what to do with all of this. But my own challenge is to figure it out. Dig in. Spend the time. Shut off something else, some party, some work, some something else, and figure it out.
All right, thank you. Is this still on? Okay. So we're going to divide our questions now into three areas. One, technology and the learning process, like how we would use technology in the classroom for the teaching and learning, or not. And then the role of tech tools and internet resources for the teacher, looking at teachers only. And then part three, the question of how much should the school be preparing students, especially upper grade students, for living in a connected world? How much tech preparation should the school take on themselves to give to the high schoolers or the young people about that? So I'm going to lead off with some questions here, and we'll get these fellows a chance to give their sage advice first, hopefully concisely, and then we'll see what your thoughts are, and if you have a related question. We do have a number of questions to cover, so we're going to keep it moving along. I think we have about 25 minutes or something left here, so I'm going to lead off with the first question. What's the role of traditional reference materials? Why should we teach children to be able to look up things in the Strong's Concordance when, as soon as they're out of school, they never will again, because they'll use a Bible program or something else to find a verse or to find a Hebrew or hover over it and see the alternate translations and so on, because that is what a lot of people do. Why should we teach dictionary skills? Why should you buy a World Book Encyclopedia for the classroom when Wikipedia is always there and maybe more accurate, maybe not? Why should you have traditional reference books on the shelf and teach children how to use them in the age of just Google it, just find out? That's the question. So who wants to go first?
One thing I've noticed in the classroom as I've been back teaching again, if you Google something, you can just make a wild stab at it. One word, and then it's going to throw a whole bunch of things at you. And, oh, yeah, that's really what I meant. And you go to that, and you go on from there. That's not good enough in the encyclopedia. I was working with either a 10th or 11th grader not long ago, and he's struggling to figure out how to use the encyclopedia to look up a certain thing that is, you know, it's not word for word like it's going to be in the encyclopedia. So I had to walk him through the steps. And he's a little bit intrigued with this idea that you really have to sit and think of what you're going to look for and look for that specific thing in the encyclopedia instead of just making a wild stab at it. I think it was good for him.
Thank you. Any other comments on reference book skills?
Well, now, I'm waiting in some. If I mispronounce something, let me know. But that question, that manual part of that, has been interesting to me. In this book, a quote from this book, page 40 there, it says, "The deeper problem is that looking up an answer mistakes answering the question for learning." So just electronically popping up the information mistakes. The deeper problem is that looking up the answer mistakes answering the question for learning. So we're looking for more than just answers that pop up. This thing of kinetic energy, does somebody know? We're not talking about chi and yin and yang here or anything. If you understand, are you familiar with what that kinetic energy? I had to look it up in the dictionary. But basically what that means is, and this is what Silicon Valley schools are driving at in some of what they're doing. Kinetic, it's ever related to the motion of material bodies, energy associated with it. So basically, to keep that simple, what it's simply saying is transferring just knowledge and understanding, a transformation of knowledge into a practical application. That's why they're knitting in math class. That's why they're cutting up quesadillas and oranges. That's why they're splashing in the puddles at recess, is because they're seeing the active material part of this whole thing is very important. There's this kinetic transformation of information by way of meaningful interpretation. So that sounds pretty. But there's this pyramid among social guys that are studying the education. You got data, info, knowledge, wisdom. There's actually a pyramid system that they have to where electronic does not make that transformation. There's something about pulling that dictionary off the shelf and putting their hands on something and following through to where they understood it and retained it. There's something about that that electronic is not doing.
Yes, thank you. How many of you, if you're in education, especially maybe you're given that bent, but when you were young, before there was Google, if you're that age, you looked up a word in the dictionary and then you looked at the meanings of 10 other things you didn't go for originally. Anyone else like that here? Okay, this is a group of educators. So yes, dictionary reading is where you get stuck, which is you can't do that at Google, but Google will probably give you a link to a video you can watch, so you'll get stuck some other way and much less profitably perhaps. But any other quick response on this table to the subject? Go ahead.
The point about, I think he was making about the kinetic energy, I don't know if you have that experience, but if you have read, if you've looked something up in a book, you can often remember which side of the page it was on, maybe, things like that. And that is one of the reasons that looking things up in a traditional reference book actually sticks in your brain better. So that's why I don't think the skills needed are obsolete. I do think it's very good if we actually do teach, if we're going to use Google, if we teach skills related to finding reputable websites, which maybe we talk about more later.
Good. Excellent. All right, your turn. On this subject, any thoughts, questions? Yes, go ahead. Yes. Good point. Who are you depending on for the answers now? You know, depending on who you talk to, you shouldn't depend on Merriam-Webster either. They're a bunch of liberals. You're supposed to use American Heritage. But anyway, any other thoughts here? We're not going to wait long because we have more questions to cover, but... That's an excellent question because it's a question about where and when. Okay, so if we throw in the towel and say, why teach them how to look up a word in the encyclopedia or concept reference books if you could just have a tablet on every child's desk like a lot of progressive schools want to, then that becomes a valid question. Like, why would you? Why not teach them how to look it up? We'll come back to that on the devices in the classroom question a little bit maybe. Actually, why don't we just go right into that here? We have a question here. What about the role of this is maybe an easier one, I hope. But what about the role in say middle school and high school at levels for the students just to have their own devices, their own phones in their pockets at school? Do you have any quick responses here? Why would you or wouldn't you allow that?
One problem that I hear about from some schools that did allow phones at the desk, children were able to use them, was secretly passing knowledge from one person to the other, cheating on tests. You can Google for your answers too, but... if your buddy down the row knows the answer, just text him. And how distracting. Not the way I'm interested in running a classroom.
One thing I think you need to remember is that school is about learning. And that's obvious. But I think the tough things in life that you will face after school, the answers to those you won't get with Google. So somewhere you have to learn it before how to use something else other than Google to resolve some tough questions. I have learned that a lot of answers come with a lot of agony and time and prayer for the tough questions. And I wonder if my children are learning that.
So let's just ask the question this way. How many of you represent a school that allows the high schoolers to keep their phones at their desks or in their pockets during the day? How many of you have a school where that's standard? Oh, why are we talking about this? They don't even like that. So let me ask you this question now. How many of you present here in the last 7 days looked something up online on your phone instead of looking it up in a book? Hypocrites. That, which was the point you were making. That's right. So, and I will honestly say I'm a little conflicted on this, but it is still true that there's a big difference between children from, say, first grade to graduation, whatever, learning to use the traditional sources and engaging in what I call the exquisite agony of learning. The exquisite agony of learning and looking it up and figuring it out. Now, what is the question I'm even trying to answer here and finding their way through it? If they do not do that, but from first grade to adulthood, they are asking Google every time. I know who I'd want to have to cut me up if he's my surgeon. Not the fellow who has to Google it halfway through. Or watch another video. See, we cut in from the wrong end. So I'm just saying, there is something about the permanence, the exquisite agony of learning and learning the processes, doing the tests and scoring objectively on the tests. I have got it. I'm not just looking it up again. We're kind of old here. We're talking about this stuff, but any quick responses on this yet? We're going to move on. Devices in the classroom, access.
It's just like calculator. You don't want students exactly what they're learning from math. But once they have it, then I would let them use the calculator. Once they've got it mastered,
So that's a good question here. I actually had that down. That's what I thought. That's how I taught all my years. I don't feel that same level of conviction anymore in some of our schools, where calculators are in at fourth and fifth grade, because they'll save a little time. I'm seeing that kind of thing. I think that's a mistake. But you respond here, any of you?
That's a good question. I think that memory, that's a good question that's being discussed. There's in
a lot of high schools anymore, they have what they call DBQs, which is students have so lost their ability to research, their concept of research. It's silly how stupid, ignorant would be a better word, how ignorant some of these young people are at their inability to practically research. And so they've come up with DBQs, document-based questions. So the teacher will do all the research for the assignment, organize it nicely in a packet, and then hand it to the students. That's the only way they're being able to. So.
I'm going to move on, but let's move now to the teachers. Because, you know, monkey see, monkey do. There's a lot of connection between. Somebody had the great illustration in one of the other workshops about the child who did not like the way that mom and dad cared a lot more about this little plastic thing they're always looking at than they cared about listening to him. And so the child was flushing the phones down the toilet. That's a fairly perceptive toddler, I would say. But so what's the role of influence? The teachers. So we're going to go now to the question of what about the teacher's dependence on internet knowledge and resources and quick answers, either in preparing himself as he prepares for classes or actually in front of the children? So there's a question in the room and out comes his phone. Oh, well, you know, here, this is kind of neat. Hey, children, look at this. That's the question. So maybe specifically it could be, I'll make this concrete. What do you think about the teacher's devices being present and in use in the classroom during lecture time, during class time? Somebody on the panel here.
I don't like it very much for myself. It's distracting to me. If my phone buzzes and I get a text, it distracts me from what I'm saying. And if I'm expecting an email or something like that, and it's in the back of my mind, and it distracts me from teaching my lesson well. And the students notice it.
How many of you have policies in your school about this? So give me an example. What might be a guideline you have? Anybody? Go ahead. Okay. And so otherwise it's not being used. Okay. Anything else? Use them for timers. Good. Any other thoughts? I think it's right. You're not going to make your point. Children, we want to learn how to use books if the teacher's not. And besides, you make a big point about how important this device is to your life if it's out every 5 minutes and you consult it all the time, but the children don't have them or whatever. Yeah, your distractions, there's a lot of things there. Let's think a little bit about the teacher's preparation. So I can remember in my early pre-internet days of teaching, if I was going to prepare for a biology class or a history lecture or an algebra class or whatever, I didn't have the option to look for a neat YouTube video explaining this. It didn't exist. There wasn't even Wikipedia or a nice teacher's website with resources. What did I do? I got the textbooks. I owned them. I bought them. I had hundreds of textbooks and reference materials lining my classroom and my home office. And I sat there and studied into the night hours, which is, you know, how old teachers get old. Because I wanted to know it. And I studied it and I made notes and I went the next day and presented it. Today, if I were teaching right now, I know what I would be tempted to do. It's faster. What are some of your responses on internet resource?
I already talked, but there's a story that I remember about this one from a professor in a college who was asked a question by his students, and he said, I don't know. So he pulled out his phone, and he was looking it up, and he was just kind of muttering to himself as he's looking this up on his phone. He said, what did professors do before Wikipedia? And one of the students said, they knew stuff.
Just a thought question. If it's an issue with the children, why wouldn't the same question apply to the teachers, in a sense? Another thing that's interesting is, here's a quote, the web provides a convenient and compelling supplement to personal memory. But when we start to use the web as a substitute for personal memory, by bypassing the inner processes of consolidation, that's, I think, what James was describing, by bypassing the process of consolidation, we risk emptying our minds of their riches. There's something about that process, and I don't know why, and I look up things on Google, but I wonder if we would be better off to just try to make sure somehow that the fundamentals are staying in place by way of the manual side, And then if there's a principled way to supplement that with some information outside of that, would seem like.
Any thoughts, responses here? Questions? Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, how many of us got our wisdom from a 30-year-old encyclopedia or worse? This is a true story, that when I was in grade school, I remember being surprised one time when I had my math book at home, and I asked my mom on an inspiration, I said, "Mom, what kind of math did you have when you were in school?" She said, "That book." The same textbook. The exact same textbook that I had. She had. It was a difference of, I don't know what, 30 years or more. I don't know, 40 years. So there are, I agree with Malin's thought there that we can't slice this, that it's all one and all the other. But did I see another hand? Yes. Right, right. Good point.
5 minutes remaining.
5 minutes remaining? Okay. I better set a timer. Let's talk about the last subject here, and that is, well, what is the school's role in preparing? Is there any role in the school preparing, especially upper grade students, knowing how to look for information on the internet, knowing how to use devices wisely? Computer literacy, keyboarding. Let's have some quick responses here and we'll take some of your thoughts.
At our school, we're interested in the children learning how to run a keyboard and know some things like that, but our devices there at the school are pretty much locked down to the children as far as getting on the internet and only used for a typing exercise that doesn't need to go into the internet. So we're leaving that more up to the home to work more with that and the controls that they want to put on that, and instead of our school putting a lot of effort into training the children.
Thank you. Any other from the panelists here? How about group here? Questions or comments on the role of the school in teaching prudent technology use? Yes. Good story. There was another hand. Derek.
In eighth grade, language arts, the students required their research paper, and I found that it's very difficult to find resource material at the local library for those topics that they choose. And so I think it's important that we give them some guidelines on how to look it up. I mean, obviously, parents can do that at home too, but there's the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I see another hand. I'll say this, if the school is going to have a role in teaching children, teenagers, whatever, to use the internet wisely, then you sort of have to have the internet at school, right? I mean, it's kind of a given. When you do that, you know what we run into next. How are you going to do that? Who's in charge of that? Is the whole wide internet open for the children? How much of it is appropriate? Those are really tough questions then. How many of you have wrestled with that in your school boards? Not much. We haven't gone there. How many of you have internet provision for your high schoolers to use at your school? So we're not there a little bit, but not too much. Okay. Well, if you would want to go there, I can promise you a nice long board meeting. Because now you're kind of held hostage by, well, what about the homes? You thought it was hard to find books for the library that everybody likes. Try setting up internet access that every home is okay with for the high schoolers. Now you're in real water. So I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying you know what you're getting into there if you go that route. Any other thoughts? We are about at what? Time out here? Okay. Go ahead.
Marilyn, I agree with your thought there as far as current info. I think that's a good point. I think one thing we should be aware of, though, is on the other side of that is it seems like the more exposure we have to some of this stuff, the more what we need to know is changing. I find it interesting, even the weather app on your phone. You know, you used to, there's nothing wrong with checking the weather. We've been doing that for a little while. But I've been impressed with how long we stand around and discuss whether we should do something because somebody's phone said it might rain, 30% chance tomorrow. And we're in a dither here whether we should do this or that. Oh, come on. We're immobilized by surprisingly little sometimes. So I agree. I think current information is good. And yet, the more we've got in our pocket, the more a dilemma we create for ourselves. And I think we can, as schools... I mean, I think this is a good discussion, but I one thing James and I talked about a little bit, and that is how does where we are at as parents and brotherhoods in our homes and in our churches, how does that render effective or ineffective where we are in a discussion like this? Mm-hmm. Where we are in that. Jesus said, I'll build my church. He didn't say, I'll build my school. So I think being together as brotherhoods and working through that together is really important.
Thank you for your contribution here. I'm going to close with this quote. I read it years ago. This man had a favorite university teacher. His name was Mark Hopkins, and you've probably seen the quote. He said, the perfect university was me sitting on one end of the log and Mark Hopkins sitting on the other end, and we were talking.